talk about parking. Parking is one of the most emotionally charged and intellectually challenging and fascinating issues we deal with. And I do not say that lightly. And it definitely presents challenges. On the one hand, there's a strong argument against devoting too much of our public and private resources to parking. Because, for example, if you require businesses and residences to have parking for everybody who might possibly ever show up, then that adds to the cost of goods and services and housing. And if we build society around the idea that everybody should be able to park for free anywhere they're going easily, then we're in effect encouraging people to drive when in fact we would rather people bike and walk and take transit. However, I'm quite sympathetic to people who say, look, I'm used to be able to park in front of my house in my neighborhood, and now I can't find a place to park because there's been all sorts of residential growth and commercial growth in my neighborhood, and now suddenly what was easy is really hard. And also, although ideally we want everybody to bike and walk and take transit, the fact is that we live in a city that does not have the New York City subway system and does not have the Copenhagen bike infrastructure, so people can legitimately say, you can't expect me to bike and walk and take transit everywhere. And although we can say, of course, as we get greater density, transit will be more viable, it will have more transit, et cetera, that's in the future, it's not now. So we need to try to address everybody's legitimate concerns. And fortunately, we have our top-notch people working on this issue. So at this point, I'd like to introduce Melissa McCready and Grant and Judith Gray and Mauricio Leclerc and Grant Moorhead, who have been working with a lot of really engaged citizens throughout the city who feel passionate about this issue and have given a lot of thought to it to figure out some parking solutions. We also had a parking symposium this past summer. We invited parking experts from around the world to share exciting new ideas, and we had a lot of people show up at that symposium. A lot of Portlanders showed up to listen and offer comments and their own insights. So, and PBOT has been largely working with two stakeholder advisory committees, and their work has led to the ideas and recommendations we'll discuss today. So, now, without further ado, I will turn the next part of the program over to Leah Treat.
Thank you, and thank you for meeting with us today. As the commissioner said, this is a really emotional topic, and this is not one that we've entered into lightly, but it's really important for us to grapple with parking in the city. As you're well aware, the city is growing and rapidly changing, which is creating a lot of tension, but also opportunity for us to grow gracefully in our communities. So as communities are becoming more dense, the demand for parking and the tension among residents and visitors is growing, and we would like to be able to try to provide tools to our businesses and communities in this process. And, you know, the last time the city overhauled its parking policies was more than 20 years ago. So they are due for an update, just for good measure, but given the environment that we're in, really need an update. We are expecting by 2035 that we're going to have 122,000 more households, 135,000 more jobs, and 1.2 million daily trips. And so with all of that is going to become increased pressure on our transportation system overall, but increasingly for parking demand. From our perspective, we see streets as public spaces, not just roadways with parking spaces. We actually are trying to change the conversation around seeing a road and having parking spaces next to the curb to identifying the street next to the curb as a curb zone, and it could actually be used for many things. It shouldn't be automatically assumed to be a parking space. So that's part of the conversation that you'll hear today. We need to be managing the curb zone more efficiently, and the our two-year work plan that we published in January, Portland Progress, we included actionable items that we are working on currently and as part of what we'll be talking to you about today. And the actionable items that we are trying to accomplish this year and next are overhauling the on-street parking management policies, clarifying the process for parking permit fees, and educating area parking permit districts to dedicate a portion of permit revenue to fund transportation demand management programs. So that's a program to try to shift how and when people travel. And do a permit review fee, do a review of our permit fees to value capture the right-of-way. So parking spaces are a very undervalued asset in the city. If you look at the demand for them and how they are used, I believe there needs to be a rebalancing of the valuation of the curb zone. And we're also looking at shared parking. So with that, and in respect for your time, I want to turn it over to staff to really dig into the details from here.
Got the right button. Thank you. Good morning, Marisa Leclerc, planner at PBAT. Here's the agenda. We have a tight agenda, so we'd like to, if we can, just be disciplined and make sure that we cover all the items, and we can get out in time so we can enjoy the activities across the street in a little bit. So in front of you, you have a packet with the agenda, but as well, we have a PowerPoint presentation that it will help us navigate through the discussion and provide some interesting facts and figures that will help ground us into as to what we're doing. Before we get going, I want to acknowledge the team that we have. You know, our partner agencies, the Portland Development Commission, Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, and the Oregon Department of Transportation, as well as our consultants, Kittleson Associates, Rick Williams and consultant, who couldn't be here, and Nelson Niger, who are here. We have Brian Canepa, he'll be speaking in a little bit from San Francisco office. He flew for this event. So the strategy is multifaceted. It has many elements, and it will touch on many things, and we'll have to come to you several times in the next year, starting in November. So we want to give you now an overview of and the big picture of where we're headed. And we have many topics to talk about. We won't be able to talk to all of them today, but the ones, so this slide number two, and I'll flip through this fairly quickly. So we will be talking about centers and corridor parking toolkit, and Grant will talk about that. I'll touch briefly on the Central City Parking Policy Update and the zoning recommendations that were coming up, and then Brian will talk about the management of the public system, something we're hopefully a new program called Performance-Based Parking Management. And then Judith will finish with downtown meter rate adjustment, something that came out of our work as part of the Central City. We'll not be talking about the elements on page three. They are very important, but at this point, you know, there are ongoing processes or there are coming projects, and we just don't have time on the agenda, but we can always talk to you offline about that. So moving on page four, slide four, I wanted to give you a brief overview, so I'll flip fairly quickly about parking and where we are today. The story for Portland started in the 20s when people, Americans, began to embrace the car. Pretty soon, the area next to the curb, who used to be for horses, and you have horse rings, you know, you still see them around, became increasingly by de facto the place where you store your car, and that became on-street parking. Ever since, we call it the on-street parking lane. That led to a rapid growth in the use of that space, and by the 30s, all over the country, retailers were complaining that the employees now were coming in and they were using this space for all day long, and that space should belong to visitors. So in 1935, in Oklahoma City, an inventor invented the parking meter, the first coin-operated meter. You can see it on the left here. A year later, Portland, city council was adopting a policy. We want that here because they heard from retailers that we needed a better way to manage our right-of-way, what Leah was just talking about. So in 1938, over 1,300 parking meters were installed in what today we call the downtown core. There was a nervousness, but it was actually a smashing success, not just in Oklahoma City and Portland, but all over the country. And since then, we've managed the on-street parking in front of commercial areas, primarily for retail activities, short-term trips, and the meter district has expanded outward. That led to, in the 80s, a residential permit program, because many employees were choosing to park outside of the central city, not pay the meter, and come in. And a commuter program, which is what we have today, it serves the purposes of discouraging commuters from parking here, but it does not address the needs of today, which is the parking challenges that happens within an area that is growing. Division, Hawthorne, they have growing pains among themselves, not just the commuters coming in and moving out. So we need a new program about that. And we've worked successfully in some hybrid at this point in the Central East Side and Northwest, but we need to start and develop a new program about that. And Grant will talk about that in a little bit. The next slide, five, basically. Gander Ridge was at the time basically just south of I-405 on the PSU side. It's now Zone B. So the neighborhood's just on this in South Portland neighborhood. That was the name. Actually, somebody in our parking operations had that sign. So.
Leah, maintain some of these in your inventory? Do you have some in that collection?
The parking signs?
The old parking meters?
Yeah.
They're like a little museum or something?
No, we don't, but that would be fascinating.
That would be a potential action item for the citywide parking strategy. Develop a... I'm collecting ideas, so that's it. Thank you, Commissioner. So basically, because we began to prioritize the use of the space, public space, to short-term, and there was a demand for employees to come in and park and drive. So slide 5 shows what was happening since the 30s through the 60s, that developers began to tear down old buildings, you know, dilapidated buildings in around old town, you know, obsolete buildings, because they did not have parking, and it led to a whole reshaping of the downtown, and basically a quote from the time is like, we were destroying downtown in order to save it. So to provide parking spaces for the new office tower, that we were destroying the old character of the neighborhood. So we had to put a stop to that, because in the next page, you know, that led to a congestion, the downtown was dying, you know, the suburbs were growing, and we began to have constant air quality violations. At some point, we had 3 violations 1 out of 3 days, and that was carbon monoxide at the time. And the federal government implemented the Clean Air Act, and we were out of compliance. We had to get our act in order, so we began to look at new ways of planning, and actually that was one of the impetus for the new planning system that we have in Portland and the region. A slap from the time showed that if we were going to grow, because the city and the downtown needed to grow, we needed to, this region needed to have a strong center, we would have to come up with 6 more big pinks, you know, U.S. Bank Tower, just to supply parking at suburban rates. So that was, you know, unaffordable and unwise, limit given the limited capacity on our streets that we have today. Therefore, exactly. So we moved to a new model, which has been very successful, and it has led to the development of the central.
This is not what our zoning changes. This did not authorize this kind of development.
Yeah, the West Quadrant did not authorize that. So we moved on page 8 then to a new paradigm, and we've been very successful at it. Compact development, instead of relying on large lots with surface parking lot and low density, to accommodating greater density in shorter, in smaller spaces with smart parking policies surrounded by a well-developed transit and multimodal network. So we've been successful in the central city. We're successful now in areas like Division, Mississippi, and others. Yet, we're now at the instance in which we are very successful, to the point in which we are having growing pains in the parking sector, because, you know, there's a spillover effect that happens when people from outside the area, even within the area, begin to drive into this commercial area, and parking begins to spill over into single-family neighborhoods. In addition, we have new development, and they're choosing to leave their car long stored on our streets. So, and that's why we developed a new program, and we have a new committee, and Grant will pick it up from this slide on in a little bit. So we'll be addressing that, and we have many tools for that. Page 10, in our research, we know that we have also, throughout the city, a lot of parking resources, surface parking lots in neighborhoods. We have smart parks, but are underutilized. At night, smart park is pretty much empty. Office towers around here are empty at night, at the same time that people are looking for spaces to go to the Schnitzer, to go visit their relatives, you know, that live in PSU and so forth.
Can you explain to us why they're underutilized?
Yes, we have regulations. Basically, we have regulations that impede that sharing of parking. You know, and the way the building managers manage the parking is for their single use. You know, we in our policies often say that this parking will be accessory, meaning only for that particular use. You will not open it up as a commercial parking lot for other uses, and we want to change that.
Does this also pick up the issue we previewed a while ago that, like, the U.S. Bank in North Southeast that has a lot that after hours they can't use for parking when there's becoming a restaurant row, but maybe with changing the law they could provide some parking and activate space?
Yes. So instead of having a sign, if you park here, you will be towed, you say you're welcome to come here and stay and shop in our district.
Just one comment on that. The inner Southeast around, say, just off of Morrison, there's 2 things that we've heard from. One is actually the parking. The 2 is activating dead space, because those spaces become attractive nuisances after hours. And by having parking on them, you accomplish two goals.
Great.
For the record, are you going to be proposing that they can only give it away or that they could rent it out as well?
They would be able to use it as a commercial space, so they could be rented out. So in the central city, there's an additional layer, which is not allowed, but also the code was written in a very complicated way to address air quality concerns. So now those opportunities are not present, and we want to be able to not just allow for the sharing, but also simplify the code quite a bit. People spend a lot of money paying attorneys to determine what the code says, and we want to be able to do away with that. Next.
To what extent is air quality still a limiting factor?
Great question. I was going to come back later. Since 1987, we haven't had a carbon monoxide violation. Now, the air quality issues are regional, and Metro does that for us, and we're in compliance. We have what we call sniffers, you know, throughout downtown, and they haven't had a violation since 87. So.
But we do need to be mindful of that so that we don't create a new problem.
Yeah, and in this case, we continue to move towards greater mode split for alternative modes so that we do not create, in this case, we don't add to carbon emissions, which is the big problem today regarding air quality. So another slide 11, you know, it's very challenging to adjust the parking rates when we do have them in the central city, and also initiate parking management plans and permits throughout the city. So we want to simplify that, and we'll talk a little bit more about it. Next slide, to move quickly. 12, Leah just addressed that. You know, we want to reevaluate and reevaluate the right of way. It's not a free commodity. It costs to operate and maintain, but also it comes with opportunity cost. In many cases, parking may not be the best use of that space. It could be a travel lane, a transit holding lane, a bike lane, curb extensions, larger trees, street trees, public art, et cetera. So keep moving on. 13, the idea would be that we come up with a citywide parking strategy that addresses today's problems, but tomorrow's as well. So we would develop a suite of tools, some of them new, that we'll be able to tailor in the future to specific circumstances. So this slide is intended to reflect that as areas intensify, that would be going from the left to the right on the X axle, horizontal axle. You know, downtown being the densest, it would probably need the most intense applications. But in areas like Alberta and Hawthorne, you know, we may start with newer, lower-hanging fruit applications first, and we'll be able to move up as areas identify before this parking situation gets out of hand. You know, so maintaining our livability.
Where on this chart on page 13 does park and ride fall? The idea to want to encourage people to drive to a non-stop park and then leave their car out of the center?
It would be on the higher end. Providing new parking is typically very expensive, and we want to be able to use other tools before. Having said that, the lateral system allows us to expand, you know, incur that expense because of that larger transit system. We have, as the Commissioner Novick said, we have two committees in which we work on this. One is for the central city, and over 30 stakeholders, neighborhoods, business associations, organizations, affordable housing advocates, modal advocates, and the same for the centers and corridor, which Grant manages, and that's for areas, commercial areas outside of the central city, and that you can see some examples here, Hollywood Division 28, and we have also broad representations from those areas throughout the city. On top of it, we have the Transportation System Plan, TSP, Technical Expert Group, TEG, that we meet frequently with them to talk about the larger policy issues and make sure that where we're coming up is consistent with the larger comp plan and TSP objectives. So page 15, a little bit of our products. You know, we'll be coming back with council starting November for the downtown parking district meter adjustment. Also, the TSP language coming up in the comprehensive plan has some new language on parking, especially relabeling the on-street parking zone, the curb zone, to move away that expectation that it's always going to be for on-street parking. The creation of a new residential permit, likely early spring 2016. A new policy to create performance-based parking management framework. And then the parking policies of the central city will be tied into the central city 2035 plan that BPS is going to bring here approximately summer of 2016. Next page is the timeline for the topics of today. So we have about 2-3 meetings with our committee before we begin to write recommendations for to bring you back here or bring to Bureau the Planning Commission, depending on what the topic is. So this is what we think is timely to get an early feedback from you on these topics as we wrap it up.
You know, having survived the debate around parking in the 23rd Street area, I'm sorry, which was a multi-year process with lots of controversy, at some point, could you give us a preview of where the hot spots are going to be here? What are the areas where you think it's likely is we'll get consensus among a broad group of stakeholders, and where is the rubber going to hit the road, to forgive the pun?
Yes. So with that, we'll want to move into the first item in more depth, and Grant Moorhead will talk about the Centers and Corridor Parking Toolkit primarily.
Thank you. Yeah, Commissioner Fish, that's a good segue, actually. We've been working with, in addition to the Central City Committee, we have a neighborhood committee represented by people citywide that are looking at parking issues in neighborhoods outside of the Central City. So we, moving to slide 18, we saw this earlier. I want to underscore the third bullet point here. As we've seen development occurring in these areas, these mixed-use centers and corridors, we've really found that our parking management strategies and policies are outdated, and we need to update them to address the types of demand that we're seeing. It's not a problem that we've really had to face as a city on such a wide scale as development is occurring at a relatively unprecedented rate at this time. That was kind of the impetus for doing this entire parking policy overhaul, was feedback from the community about how what we're doing currently is not really working for them. So if you think broadly, move to the next slide, please. If you think broadly about 19, about how we manage parking, there's really a three-legged stool of parking management. And the first item is the parking supply. So how much parking do we have to build? And that's something that the council addressed back in 2013 when new minimum parking requirements were adopted for multifamily developments. In adopting that ordinance, the council directed PBOT to come back to you with a revised permit program, and that's another kind of main focus of what we've been doing. We have a permit parking program that Mauricio mentioned. It's been in place since 1981. It's called the Area Parking Permit Program. It was designed to address a very specific issue. It was designed to address commuter parking. So if you look at the criteria to establish one of those areas and how we manage the parking in those areas, it's not very well suited for growing dynamic commercial areas that have a lot of residential and commercial activity going on at kind of the same time.
Grant, just to clarify what you meant by commuter parking, maybe everybody remembers this, but it was addressed specifically the phenomenon of commuters come in from outside and park in a neighborhood in order to take transit or walk or something into the downtown. So our parking permit programs were designed to address that particular problem, and now we have parking problems even in areas where we don't have that big commuter phenomenon.
Correct. Thank you for that clarification. So we're focusing on the other two sort of legs of the stool. So how do we manage the on-street parking supply by determining who has the priority access to that parking? And finally, how do we, in the longer term, reduce demand for parking? And the ultimate goal there being reducing demand on the overall transportation system. So again, as we mentioned, next slide, please. We have a stakeholder committee. They've met 8 times since late 2014. We have probably 2 more meetings with them. The next one is on October 29th. So this is very timely. We would like to go back to them at our next meeting with feedback from the council on what we've proposed and how we've modified our proposal based on their feedback so far. We are anticipating action by the council in early 2016, although understanding that there's a lot of stuff on your plate, we may have to squeeze that in at some point in the spring. But we are not tied directly to the comprehensive plan or any of the other ongoing planning efforts as a part of this effort specifically.
On this diagram, the 2 lower blobs are not labeled. Is that Hillsdale or is it Corporate Telegraph?
This is more just a kind of a conceptual diagram. They're not intended to represent actual areas. This was our, what do we call this, the scrambled egg and cheese diagram. It was.
Thank you.
There's a reason we didn't go into graphic design as professionals. but that's a good segue, Commissioner, into the next item I wanted to discuss, and that's what are our study areas. We identified 5 areas throughout the city that we wanted to take a very close look at parking demand in, and these areas were chosen to be sort of representative of other similar areas throughout the city. So we look at 3 criteria. How are they classified in the urban design framework of the comprehensive plan? So are they civic corridors? Are they neighborhood main streets? Are they town centers, neighborhood centers, that sort of thing? What type of transit service do they have? Is there light rail? Is there frequent bus? Is there no bus? And finally, how much development has occurred in these areas? So the 5 study areas that we chose, St. John's Town Center, Hollywood Town Center, Northeast 28th Avenue, Southeast Division Street, and North Mississippi Avenue are all have various levels of those three criteria that we looked at. All of them have seen significant amounts of development, which is really what we're trying to respond to. So next slide, please. What we did was in the spring, we had our consultant go out and do a 24-hour parking occupancy and turnover study, and that involved walking around prescribed routes over a 20-block area, so 80 different block faces, and taking an inventory of where cars were parked, how long they were staying, and through analysis determining what the purpose of the parking was, whether it was a residential or commercial trip. And we found that probably the two most interesting things that we found out of the study were that the peak parking demand for on-street parking in these areas occurs at night, generally in the 6 to 9 p.m. time frame, which is very different, again, from the commuter parking issue, which is more of a daytime peak, people driving in the morning and leaving around 5 o'clock. We're finding that the combination of residential parking and commercial parking on, you know, Mississippi and Division, et cetera, is really producing a later evening peak. So people coming home from work and they're kind of competing for parking with the dinner or happy hour crowd. The next thing that I would cite is that on-street parking was significantly more utilized than off-street parking. And again, this gets at the prohibition on commercial parking that we have in a lot of these areas. Mississippi Avenue had the highest utilization that we measured at 86%. Division and Burnside were in the low to mid 70s. But again, I would highlight that this was a one-day study, so there's going to be some variation there. I think we're pretty confident in saying that Division, 28th, and Mississippi are all relatively highly utilized on-street parking-wise, perhaps approaching what we would consider the effective capacity of the parking system in those areas, while the off-street parking is pretty underutilized. The highest rate we measured was about 70% during the peak. So we took the data.
Sorry, what's the radius again?
The center was the commercial street, and then we went about two blocks on either side. So it was
like on Division, for example, the picture you had earlier is right ground zero of the restaurants and the apartments going up. So you're studying Division and then the two blocks where many of the neighbors complain that there's displacement that people coming for dinner or parking.
Correct. And we were in the low to mid 30s on Division. So right where all the development happened. We concentrated the parking study around where the 7 or 8 apartment buildings were built over the last couple of years. So we took the data, and with help from the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, we projected what future parking demand might look like in 2035 based on the growth projections in the proposed comprehensive plan. And they looked at different scenarios such as how many parking lots are redeveloped, how much parking new developments will provide, and varying rates of automobile ownership among people who live in those areas. And the bottom line here is that we came up with scenarios, plausible development scenarios, in all of these study areas where the parking demand exceeds the available on-street parking supply. And what that means in practice is that the parking demand will spill out further into the neighborhoods. So if you think about a street like Division, which has, you know, parallels on Hawthorne and Belmont, similarly in North Mississippi, you have Vancouver Williams not too far away, eventually we could see a situation where the demand from those areas are starting to overlap. And during the peak hours, we would have on-street parking that's completely utilized, completely full. And that's not a good situation for really anybody because nobody can find parking. You have people then driving around looking for a space that increases emissions, it wastes fuel, it creates distraction among drivers. So we want to try and avoid getting to that situation. So we, correct, absolutely. So what we are proposing, again, the second and third legs of the stool here are managing on-street parking access, something that we have done, you know, on kind of a piecemeal ad hoc basis, but we want to create more of a system-wide, citywide program to do that, and reducing the overall demand for parking. And what we're proposing is a residential parking system that will address these issues without the need to further increase the minimum required parking, which is one tool, but we have other tools in the toolbox that we want to employ at this time before we go back and revisit that issue. So the parking permit concept, we're on slide 25 now. It's similar in a lot of ways to the current parking permit system. It's different in several key ways. One of the main differences between what we're proposing now and versus the way we currently do things is we want to tie the priority parking access to the primary land use. And we propose to do that by using zoning. So the residential parking areas would be drawn, the boundaries would be drawn to only encompass properties that are zoned for residential use. So think about commercial and employment zones, our mixed use zones, which do allow residential use, but they're primarily for commercial development. Those areas would not be managed for residential parking. We would continue to manage those areas for short-term parking, for turnover, think 1-2 hour time limits, those sorts of things that you see currently on Mississippi Division streets like that. Within the residential zones, we would have anybody within who lives within that zone would have priority access to permits. This would be the process to establish one of these areas would be similar, if not identical, to what the current process is, where neighborhoods opt into the program. So there's we work with the neighborhood association to draw up boundaries, and everybody within those boundaries gets a ballot in the mail, and they have a chance to vote whether or not to establish one of these areas. That's the way we've established the 12 existing permit areas, and we would propose to continue that process as part of this new concept.
And just to elaborate on that a bit, what we have now is a double majority process where you have to get over 50% of the residents voting in the election to decide to establish a permit district. And right now we require a 60% vote in favor. That's something I think we might want to consider. Maybe it could just be 50% of the people in the area vote, and if 51% want to establish a district, we could establish it.
So before you go into the details, I'm not really understanding the concept. If you want to go visit Hawthorne and go to dinner and a movie, how is the permit system going to help in that situation?
Well, the way that it would work, each neighborhood would have a committee that's has a neighborhood and business representatives on it, and they would develop a specific implementation plan where details like what types of exemptions are there, is it 2 hour except by permit, 3 hour except by permit, that sort of thing.
Right, but that's not going to change my behavior in terms of wanting to spend 3 hours or 4 hours window shopping on Hawthorne. The permit districts that we have nearby parking and or transit so that there is an alternative. I live in Southwest. There really is not a good alternative to getting to Southeast in the evening and getting home again. So I'm not going to not drive, and yet I can't then park anywhere near where I want to go.
Sorry, in those instances, when we go back to earlier, what we were talking about of trying to activate some of the private parking that exists in these areas as a relief valve. So we would be looking at businesses that have employee parking or other private parking and changing the uses to allow them for other people visiting to park in those areas as well.
I would suggest that that needs to be brought together in a package, because simply implementing a permit district, I think, is going to be detrimental to businesses and potentially to everybody.
But I mean, we do have, of course, these permit districts like in Northwest where people, you know, this time-limited parking and residential permit system, and it can be hard to find. But also now we're implementing parking meters to set aside some places where there is fast turnover, and that's where we expect a lot of the shoppers to park.
Right, but in Northwest, you can park in the smart parks and get the streetcar, and it's really quite easy to get back and forth. It's if there's nowhere for you to park where it's easy to get back and forth to it, then that's a problem.
Personally, if there aren't many smart parks on 23rd, and I've always found it a nightmare, but I don't think it's all that much different.
So you park on the 10th and Yamhill and you get the streetcar.
And there's like you could park it at 10th and Madison and take the number 4 bus up Division too. I mean, there are options there as well. I mean, what we're trying to do is give residents who feel like they don't have a place to park some tool to use to manage parking. And I mean, we do have 2 hour time limited places for visitors and other places, and we are going to try to open up this unused surface parking so that it can be rented out to people. And in some places, you know, we might eventually conclude that we need meters to address the people who are coming in to shop or restaurants, as we are in Northwest.
Also, the zoning would dictate where we do that. So along the commercial corridor, we would not have permits there. That will continue to be the priority for the retail, for visitors and short-term customers.
And to your point, Commissioner Fritz, we have been working closely with the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability on their mixed-use zoning project, and it's through the zoning code that this commercial parking allowance would be extended throughout the city. So we are working with them, and this is part of a package. We haven't quite wrapped it all up yet, but that's a very good point.
Just one piggyback to what Amanda said. Just as I find it very difficult to find parking to go to Cinema 21, I find it almost impossible to get parking to stop and pick up the pizza at Escape from New York. And, you know, that short-term, that real short-term parking means you end up spending an awful lot of time driving around. And I think I'm illustrative of a growing number of people that are likely to pick up their food and go home at some place or pick something up and go home. And that parking, that super short-term parking, is extremely difficult. And I'm competing with people who are there for, you know, spending the evening. But it's really extremely difficult. And in my neighborhood of Hollywood, there's some restaurants and places have come in that cater to the short term, pizza places where you go and pick up a pizza. It's getting harder and harder to find parking, interestingly, on Sandy for that. So, just food for thought.
So as these permit areas are rolled out. As these permit areas are rolled out, we would work closely with the neighborhood to identify what are the short-term parking needs, what is the nature of the business, what types of turnover do they expect and do they need to have. That's going to vary on a case-by-case basis. So our current practice would remain the same, and we would continue to tailor those types of elements of the program to each neighborhood. So one more thing I would add on this slide is that the each neighborhood implementation plan would be required to conduct an equity analysis. One of the things we heard loud and clear from our committee was that equity needs to be at the forefront of this issue, especially if something is going to cost money. So we would require each implementation plan to conduct an equity analysis and identify any populations such as low-income housing or senior housing and accommodate their needs for parking permits, whatever they may be. And we're also proposing a low-income discount for the cost of the annual permit. Permits are issued on an annual basis, so we would have a program in place where people with financial hardship could be accommodated. Next slide.
We're now
26. So I... Yes.
This may be somewhat off topic, but is that equity analysis also going to be conducted on our rates and hours of parking meters? I've always brought up the point that, you know, having our meters end at 7 is great for people that work in the service industry downtown. Is that kind of equity analysis going to be conducted?
It is a big topic.
Yeah. I want to see it explicitly addressed. Do you think that's a real equity issue for people that work in the service industries?
So again, on slide 26, I just want to stress that using zoning as a basis for this program is housing type neutral and its homeownership status neutral. There are a number of areas, especially in inner southeast and inner North Portland, where the zoning allows for multifamily development. We have a lot of apartment buildings in this area. And so just to dispel with the notion that this is about homeowners versus renters, it's not. It's really about residential areas being managed for residential users. So it's regardless of whether it's a single family or an apartment building.
We have a celebrity who's very concerned about parking. I
don't think her microphone was on when she made that comment, so it's not on the record. So if we could flip to the next slide, I just have a quick example of what this would look like. One of our study areas is North Mississippi Avenue, and so this map is a zoning map, and it shows, slide 27, correct, and it shows...
Yeah, could we jump back to 26? Sure. I think that we talked about the escalating fee structure, but another bullet is that we're anticipating that residents with access to off-street parking would start at the second tier. So that means that if you have your own garage, then you are going to start at the second tier.
That's correct. That's an important point that I inadvertently overlooked. We are currently, our permit system, every permit costs the same amount. It's currently $60. But if you have $60 a year. So if you have 10 cars, you can get 10 permits, and they all cost you $60. What we're proposing is that subsequent permits would have an additional cost associated with them. So your second permit would cost more than the first, the third would cost more than the second, et cetera. And that people who do have access to off-street parking, in an effort to encourage them to use that parking, we would start them off the second tier. Because in essence, what you've done, if you have a driveway, is you've taken an on-street parking space and through the curb cut, prohibited anybody from parking there and put the parking on the private property, which is this thing, which is fine. That's a very common thing, but we think that should count in the calculation.
Also, a key reason is because we would like to cap the number of permits to match what's available on the ground.
Yes, so the next slide shows the what this could potentially look like in one of our study areas. Mississippi Avenue has the red area is storefront commercial zoning. The purple area is an employment zone, central employment. That is the mixed-use area. That's where a lot of the new apartments on top of retail development has been happening. The surrounding areas are residential zones, so everything from R2.5, R1, R5, those are the residential areas that where we would manage the parking for residential use. And the, what I've drawn around there on the dashed line are just showing you where those boundaries could potentially be. This is not something we're proposing. It's not something that we're proposing to act on at any time. It's just an illustrative demonstration of what this could look like. So the final slide that I have is this table. And it really highlights the differences between our current permit program and what we're proposing. So again, the purpose of this is to manage parking in growing mixed-use areas, areas where parking demand is likely to increase. We don't have the types of commuting issues that we've traditionally been addressing. We'd like to draw the permit area boundaries based on the zoning. Currently, there's no relation to land use. They can span zones. They can span neighborhood boundaries. They can span barriers such as freeways or large arterials. We want to have a more rational basis for that. The current enforcement model is 8 a.m. to 6 p.m., again, responding to that daytime peak of commuter parking. We're offering an overnight enforcement option because typically the residential parking can be most difficult for people later in the evening, potentially even overnight. So that would be a new program that PBOT would offer. Significantly, Mauricio mentioned this, the number of permits issued, we don't currently have a... Should I try this one? We don't currently have a mechanism in our code to cap the number of permits we issue. So again, in some areas like Northwest and the Central East Side, we issue as many as twice the number of permits as we have available parking spaces. So people have come to call them hunting licenses, where you have the right to look for parking, but you may very well not find it. We want to move away from that model, have the permits be a more effective tool. Is it my voice?
No, we have a technology
upgrade. Ah, okay. To have the permits be a more effective tool in managing parking by capping the number of permits we issue based on the actual supply of parking. Again, we would want to allow for permit areas to have a per address limit. Currently, there's no limit on residential permits. Again, if I have 10 cars, I can get 10 permits. Maybe 5 would be a more reasonable limit, maybe something less than that. But we want to give permit areas the ability to create that kind of a program where they can establish those limits. The process would be the same. We are not proposing to really change how they're established. This isn't something that we're proposing to go out and impose on neighborhoods, but rather have it be another tool available to them in their parking management efforts. The cost, again, we proposed an escalating fee structure, whereas currently it's every permit costs the same amount. And finally, the equity piece. The current permit system does not address equity at all, and we would propose that each permit area have an equity analysis that accommodates the needs in particular, low-income populations.
How do you propose in the restricting the number of permits to the number of parking spaces? Supposing there are more, how do you propose to allocate the permits if there are more people wanting them than there are spaces available?
That's a great question. So the way that we've framed this up is that people who live within the permit area would have the priority access to permits, and then people outside of the area would have access to them, but they wouldn't be as part of that priority group. So the way that it could potentially...
But what if there's more people in the priority group than there are spaces?
Well, I think based on the general land use patterns in most of these residential areas, largely single family, relatively low density apartments, I don't think we would have a situation where the initial priority sales period would tap out the supply, because there's just generally tends to be enough parking in these low density residential areas.
So it'd be first in, first.
In the event that we did reach the number of permits available, there would be a waiting list maintained after that. This is a relatively new concept. We weren't able to find cities in the United States that do this. They do this in Toronto, but I believe we would be the only U.S. city that does not issue the hunting license model for parking permits.
Actually, I want to point out, these are the main questions we wanted to talk to you about because these are significant changes. So we've been talking about a couple of strategies that Grant has been kind of going over a little bit, but this is the kind of feedback I think we need.
See, what I would envision is that you've eventually sold all the permits in an area. Somebody new comes in and says, well, I don't qualify for a handicapped parking spot, but I can't walk 10 blocks with all my groceries. What are we going to do then?
So it's a tough question because, I mean, if you don't limit the number of permits, then you can get to a point where there's far more permits than there are spaces, and everybody who lives there, including people who've lived there for short time or long term time, have to drive around or park really far away and never know when they get a parking space. I mean, if people know that there's a limit, then, and if the number of permits is already taken up, then that's something that you could take into account when you move into an area. It's like, okay, I can't necessarily count on being able to park within in front of my house or within two or three blocks.
And you're limiting the kinds of people who can live in an area. If you have three small children and you have the aforementioned mobility issue, you then are not allowed to live in that neighborhood.
But if you have an unlimited number of permits, then you're actually limiting the number of people who can live in the area also, because every night you've got potluck and you might have to park six blocks away. You might have to park, you might get lucky and get to park in front of your house. So having an unlimited number of permits does not mean that everybody will be able to park where they want to park.
I think I'd prefer leaving it to the residents to figure that out rather than the government saying, no, you can't live in this area.
We are asking, what we're talking about is giving the residents tools to use to say that the residents of an area can apply to have a permit parking district with certain parameters. So in all cases, this is going to be self-initiated by the residents.
Currently, they're not. The existing permits are associated with a car. So you come in with your proof of residence and your proof of vehicle registration, and that's how you're issued a permit. We don't currently allow them to be transferred.
So if a permit is on a car, it's not the car for which it's registered, they can get a ticket?
Correct.
And that discourages black market in this
case? Yes, it does.
So these are great questions. At this point, there's some details that we need to work out. At this point, we wanted to have a discussion with you. This program that we're proposed, it's been well received by the community wherever we've been going with our stakeholder advisory committee. The direction is to proceed to develop the program and come back with many and work with another committee on these answers and come back to you maybe early next year with a more definitive proposal in which we talk about these details. But
I think we have to think about how are we welcoming new residents in. I mean, almost like the no Californians here, but it could also be the nobody from Southwest goes to live in Southeast rule too. And it would be interesting to know what is the capacity versus what will be the demand and how quickly are we going to hit the cap.
Commissioner, what would you suggest we do instead?
I think the current system where you do take your druthers about, that there's more challenges in that neighborhood, but any resident of the neighborhood gets to take on those challenges rather than the existing ones locking the door on the parking. It seems to be fairer to me. And besides which, what if you, can you change the registration on your car if you decide you want a vanity plate or something, you then apply for an amendment to the permit? Or if you get an, I'm not quite following the...
You would be able to update your license plate. So the way for us to enforce the permit is by license plate. So that would be one of the mechanisms in which we enforce is through license plate recognition of these permits. And we're way in the weeds on how we would do this, but there's a lot of options that we're discussing. And so we're just trying to figure out how to implement them in a way that is useful to everyone. And through the stakeholder committee, we've been trying to work through all of these different tools. How we actually implement them, we haven't completely vetted.
So, I mean, again, we did want council input on these three items. And so if three members of the council say, we don't want you limiting the number of permits issued per household, that's something we obviously need to take into account. If three members of the council say, we don't want you to limit the total number of permits, we have to take that into account. If three members of the council say, we don't want an escalating fee structure, then we want that in again.
It is currently a cost recovery model, yes. And this would be a policy change that would move us away from that, that would give us the ability to charge above and beyond what cost recovery might be. And there's a potential to use that money for additional transportation demand management services within the neighborhood itself. That's part of our transportation system plan proposal, is to enhance the level of TDM services that PBOT provides. And this may be one potential way to address that issue.
So I believe we're not allowed to make decisions at a work session. I'm just flagging this as a concern that I have. Obviously, your process is going to continue, and if the stakeholder group says this is what they're recommending, it'll come to council. I just anticipate some concerns along the lines that I raised.
And Commissioner Fritz, you mentioned specifically the issue of an ADA space. I think if we're requiring an equity scan in each permit area, which we are, I would include in that an accommodation for anyone with an ADA placard. And if someone came in after the fact and we needed to go above the cap by one permit to accommodate somebody with a DMB ADA sticker, I think we could probably incorporate that into the program.
There are identifiable ADA issues, and then there are challenges of moms with small children who are shopping a bunch of groceries and those kinds of things that I personally think that there's a lot of things to consider as far as established residents having more rights than new residents.
Can I ask for clarification? So the way these three bullet points are listed, one option is to limit permits per household, and another is to limit the total number of permits. So it seems that if we stayed more with the per household, then there would be, that's very different. So there would be kind of a more equity on whether you've been there for a while or not, versus the total number where if there's a waiting list. So is that a little bit more comfortable?
Yeah, I think that's a good suggestion. And I am actually kind of interested in the transferable hanger between the cars of a household.
Mm-hmm.
If, you know,
sure,
something's come up and it's my car that needs to be parked on the street rather than in the driveway, rather than somebody else in the household. I think that we're trying to make it work for everybody, right?
Well, these are three mutually exclusive options, or three
complementary options.
Complementary. Okay, that's what I thought.
Yeah.
These are three policy changes.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think they're moves in the right direction.
So as president of the council, I'm obviously handing over to the mayor, but we are a little behind on the time schedule.
Thank you for the segue, Commissioner. So now we'll move very quickly to the central city, I'll fly through the zoning recommendations because, again, we are in the middle of them, two-thirds through. We don't quite have a proposal, and they're quite complex and detailed in the zoning code, and we want to focus on new programs, new ideas to bring to you today. So on page 31, we pick it up from the introductory presentation. The central city has a very complex and mature parking management system that came from the 70s when we had air quality violations. We've done fairly well back then. When we were under violation, we implemented a parking lid in the 1975. Which put very restriction. You will not build more than about 39,000 parking spaces, and no new surface parking lots will be allowed. And that was coupled with substantial transit service as a way to make the downtown grow. And that was a key strategy for the downtown plan. By the 90s, we were approaching. We were successful in building the downtown, and we were meeting that cap, and that growth was not continuing to happen. So, in air quality, We had not had a violation since 1987, so the question came, should we relax those restrictions and come up with a new model that would allow us to grow with livability? And that became the CCTMP, Central City Transportation Management Plan. I believe the mayor was a leader in that effort. It took many years and came up with a whole new architecture that was codified in the Title 33, 510 Central City Plan District. And it has served us well. You know, we pinched the supply, we put parking maximums, you know, but we allowed the growth, and we allowed the growth of the Pearl District and now the South Waterfront and Lloyd District. And even though we have more parking, these are the most multimodal districts in the whole city and the region. So it has served us well, and it keeps our urban growth boundary from expanding. And so the Central City 2035, that's what you have on page 33, calls for a lot more growth in the next 20 years. 40,000 more jobs, 30,000 more households, and continue that model. That will put additional pressures on our transportation system, as Leah mentioned. That could lead to up to 100,000 new auto trips in the central city. I think we can manage it. Most of them will be during the off-peak, but that would only happen if we continue to invest in transit and multimodal infrastructure, so that by today, about two-thirds of commuters to the central city come by non-drive alone. We hope to, by in 20 years, that number will be 75% or so. So Metro projections put us pretty close to that target. But to do that, we need to keep being smart about how we manage transportation, and included in that is parking. So we're updating the parking policies today. It's not a revolution, it's more of an evolution, you know, simplifying what we have, updating it for today in the 21st century. The key concepts are, on page 35, encourage the development of the central city, support the mostly goal targets established in the Central City 2035 plan, introduce greater flexibility, how parking can be operated in private and public lots, limit the growth of parking, meaning keep those parking ratios, and simplify existing parking regulations.
Just pause for a moment.
Yes.
I guess one of the questions I want to just have in the air while we're talking about this and the comp plan is, okay, so we made surface parking lots a non-conforming use in 1975. How many of them are gone? And, you know, we're going to be pushed and encouraged to make that set a clock for when those uses are not just non-conforming, but not allowed. So that, you know, that issue. The other fact of life is a lot of those areas that are grandfathered surface parking lots are now food service uses, because they're mostly food carts. So I think we have a zoning and planning and transportation issue intertwined around itself there that we need to untangle and look at and get real about how many more years are we willing to just live with lots of surface parking lots that are grandfathered, and are we going to keep just not noticing that most of them aren't parking anymore?
Yeah,
I think we should face those issues. I don't have a conclusion yet for what we do with those issues, but I think people have been raising them with us, and they're right to do so.
Thank you. So we are putting more limitations on new surface parking lots. About half of them has been converted to active use since we took account in the mid '90s. And that will continue to be a trend, we hope, as development happens and areas become hip, you know, like the Pearl District does. At some point, development really becomes attracted to these areas. Also, among one of the ideas that we have, the third one, is introduce greater flexibility for the parking that you do have and manage. So basically, what we'll be doing is the new parking in a structure will have the same advantages that a surface parking lot does. So a lot of the reasons why they're not developed is because they have special provisions that are not allowed today on new surface parking lot. By equalizing that, you have a model in which the developer decides to redevelop that but maintain a lot of the commercial operations of that. So I think that's a good incentive for that in that regard. Another one would be continue to limit the growth of the parking ratios and simplify regulations. So what are we talking in our committee? What are we discussing so far? And I'll go very quickly about this. So I'm repeating here myself, increase the flexibility. So any new parking basically could be managed commercially. So if you have, after hours, if you go into Schnitz, you know, you can park in an office, for example, if that building decides to open up for commercial parking. Same to if you want to go visit residents in adjacent areas. simplify the parking entitlement regulations. The code is about 74 pages. It's very convoluted. It was made so because we were opening up the lid, and we need to be very careful with the federal government as to how we were going to do it.